Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Hi, I'm Connie Whitman, your host, and you're listening to Enlightenment of Change with me. With me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.net. I'm so excited for my guest today. I'm getting all tongue-tied. Of course, I'm going to start with my motivational quote, and it's actually by President John F. Kennedy, and he says, Everywhere immigrants have enriched and strengthened the fabric of American life. So how many of you have family members that immigrated to this country? And let's talk about after World War II. Now, what impact did that have on us as first and maybe even second generation Americans or Canadians? Did the old country work habits, cultures come with our parents, which of course they did, and our ancestors before them? And how has that affected us? Now, I know personally for myself, my dad has immigrated from Italy, and I know it impacted my childhood and my life. And my guest today wrote about her dad's journey and how it impacted her life. So my guest today is my wonderful friend, Frankie Picasso, and she and I are going to discuss her new book, For Want of 40 Pounds. And it's just a wonderful memoir of her dad's life and his impact on her and actually those around him. Her story talks about World War II, Hitler, her dad's journey, and all that he went through to survive. Now, Frankie is an international socialpreneur, talk show host, and champion for change. That's why she's on the show, who has been transforming lives and influencing cultures for her own past 30 years. Now, professionally, she's a certified life, business, and master coach trainer, author, artist, activist, and philanthropist in training, who happens to specialize in the impossible. As the founder of the Good Radio Network, TGRN, Frankie is the host of Mission Unstoppable Radio, Frankie Sense, and more. And in 2018, she added her TV channel to her network called the Good Media Network. Holy smoke, she's amazing. Please help me welcome the amazing Frankie Picasso. So, Frankie, thanks for being on.
So much, Connie. Wow, what an intro. Woo!
I know. Woohoo! Everybody wants to know you now because you're amazing.
Yay.
So, let's start. I read the book. Amazing. Yes, that's the book. It's just lovely. And I just want to comment what a beautiful memoir and beautiful gift for your dad. And we're going to talk about your dad a lot today. But I want to start first by, why did you write the book and why did you do it at this time?
Well, my dad is 94 and I started the book when he was 92. And we had talked about it through the years, and I didn't know all of his stories. I knew some of the stories. I knew that he had, you know, walked and he had come from Vienna and done some crazy stuff, but I didn't know all of the stories. But other people knew other stories, and they had kept saying, oh, gee, Bert, you should write a book. You should write a book. And I go, you know what, Dad, you should write a book. He goes, well, I'm not a writer. And he's not a writer. I mean, you know, he's brilliant, but he had limited education because of the war and all of the stuff that went on. Yeah. He's a fantastic orator. If he had to get up and give you a speech, he could like talk for hours and he'd be going, oh my God, you're amazing. However, did I just go off camera? Yeah. However, he doesn't write. So I had already written three books and he said, why don't you do this book? And I'm like, I would love to do this book. Thank you, because I really want to do it. So at that age, he said, you know what? If I don't do it now, I could die tomorrow. I better do it now. So I said, okay. So I asked Peter Jennings, another author friend that I have, if he would co-write the book with me, because I wanted somebody to kind of do the historical, to be the voice of reason, let's say. I want to do the color commentary. I wanted to give the insights and the family secrets kind of away. But Peter, you know, you interview my siblings. You go in and, like, I didn't want them to go, oh, you took over the book and you made it all about you. No. So he's, you know, cool. He's the guy that's doing that. And he did a great job. He first he didn't want to do it. He said, this is, you know, oh my God, it's a vanity project. You know, who's going to read your book? Nobody's ever going to read this book. It's going to just be for your family. I go, it's not. And so as we got into it and he interviewed my dad, he realized it's a business book. You know, it's about entrepreneurs. It's inspiring. It has a couple of different audiences. And he fell in love with my dad. And he's like, we're writing this book. As a matter of fact, he was writing another book about people who, they weren't unstoppable, but they broke the boundaries or something. I can't remember what it was. And he goes, would you be in this book? And so he actually put him in another business book that he was writing about people who just, you know, broke boundaries. So that was amazing and really cool that he did that. So my dad said, yeah, you know, come to, we went to his home and he lives in Baja in Mexico. And we stayed at his house for a week and just interviewed him every chance we had.
The poor guy, he must have been pooped. And he reminiscing and thinking, right? It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work to think, and especially to think back that many years, you know?
Absolutely.
But he did a good job. He did a really good job of remembering and you know, a little prompting here and there. And then after I left, you know, I go, oh, Dad, you know, I kind of remember you said this once. And he goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he would just fill in more spots and, you know, through the years we're writing the book. And Peter was working on the other project, and I'm like, trying to push him. Come on, like, you know, something could happen. I want my dad to see the book. I want it to be finished and published, right?
Yeah.
And so I kept pushing him. So a year went by. I go, Peter, you got to do it. Like, we got to do it now, right? Like, he's 94. Like, what could happen? And so on March 18th with his birthday, March 18th with also International Women's Day, the previous year I had published my other book, I Bared My Chest, on March 18th. And on March 18th, this 2019, His book went out to the world, and we were number one in three countries the first day. And I was like, oh my God, how amazing. How did I happen to do that? And that is just because I have wonderful people like you, Connie, who are just amazing friends and help promote and did that. And it was just an amazing birthday gift for him.
Like, yes.
And give your guy a bestseller.
Oh my God. But it's his story, and that people want to read it. Like, how that has to be very touching for him, because he had a freaking hard life. There was nothing easy about this man's journey. And yet he always came up on top, and he always persevered. And he was always like, okay, and then this is the next thing I need to do. So talk about resilience. And he's brilliant. On top of that, thank God he still has all of his faculties to share these stories with you. Are you glad that you got the co-author, especially now in retrospect?
I think I'm so glad that Peter was part of it. Peter's a little bit older, and so his voice is a little different from mine. As you read the book, you'll see that.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
But that's okay. You know what? It's kind of good, and I'm glad, because it gave me the opportunity to be me and write as me and write the things that I could add to the book and not be said, it's all about you, Frankie, right?
Absolutely.
So that was kind of a good thing for me to be able to be able to do that. And I also got to direct the book. I mean, and we wrote independent of one another. I didn't go, what are you writing on? And we didn't do any of that. He wrote his, I wrote mine. We put them together at the end and just, you know, chapter one. So that was good. And I was able to massage the book and put it all together at the end. And I was kind of happy about that too. I had a vision and.
Yeah, but I also think, Frankie, he gave just another – let's face it, it's your dad. So there's this emotional
so
intensity.
Gave another
perspective, which I think really made it almost like a historical journey. And then all of the flavor and color, you know, came from you, because you have those memories as well, being a child, and also sharing how it has impacted you as a businesswoman and now, you know, a woman in the world. So it was really very cool.
That was my intention.
Very cool how that turned out. Now, what do you think, going through and now reminiscing and writing it and journaling and the whole thing, what do you think of your dad's journey?
Amazing. Amazing. And, you know, it's interesting to see where you come from and to see bits and pieces of, oh, maybe that's why I'm this way. You know, there is a lot of my dad in me, and I'm really proud of that, because, like, thank God. I mean, I've always thank God that I have my dad as my dad. And I wish every little girl had a dad as amazing as I did. And, you know, my daughter didn't. And I said, take grandpa, because, like, if you need somebody. And all my kids absolutely adore my dad. And my son, who had a baby girl last year, she just turned one, they gave her middle name after him. They didn't care if they were a boy or girl. It was going to be named Birch after him. So I thought that was really cute. Because all the kids adore my dad. Everybody loves him. Like, who doesn't, you know?
What did they think, Frankie? Like, you have a lot of memories, but what did your kids now reading? I mean, I'm sure they, Grandpa told me the story, but he gave a lot of information that you didn't even remember or know about.
I didn't know about a lot
of
stuff.
How did your kids respond? I'm just curious.
They are amazed that this man is their grandfather. They're humbled and surprised and just grateful that, you know, this cool guy did all of this stuff. And I see bits and pieces in all of them. And I think that's really neat how that goes forward.
The genetics, yeah.
But still nobody is him, right? Like none of us are him. And I don't know if you could ever replicate, you know, Bert, but yeah, I mean, my dad, I can't ever remember him saying an unkind word to anybody. He's never put anybody down. Rich or poor, he's responded the same to people. And that's why everybody loves him, I think, because he relates at any level. Yeah. Like my dad loves wine. He's a real wine lover. But my first husband was Italian and my father-in-law was from Bari. And for some reason, he would take this wonderful wine and he'd put Coke in it. And like my mother-in-law, my stepmom would be going, "Ugh, you're putting Coke in that wine?" You know?
That's hilarious.
I know. My dad, have some more, you know? He didn't care. Whatever. Do whatever.
Love it. He was through the book, you learned that he was just so easygoing, and anyone that he interacted with felt important. Like he just had such a way, and his way is very rare, I think, even today, where you walk into a room and there could be 100 people. And if you're talking to your dad, the vibe I got was you're the only person in the room. Like you're the only one who mattered at that moment. And that's an amazing skill to have. Was there anything as you were interviewing and having these conversations, were you shocked by anything? Does anything stand out for you? You think, holy crap.
Well, I mean, the beginning at 13 years of age is kind of holy crap. You know,
tell everybody a little bit about that because it's holy crap.
Okay, my dad was born in 1925. It's now 1938. The Anschluss happened, which is the Hitler in Germany took over Austria, the country of Austria, and he. You know, they had a family store. They lived in a really nice apartment. But now his father was being picked up all the time by the SS, and they're putting them into jail and into concentration camps. And if you had a kid, they would let you out sometimes. And so my dad would, you know, kind of hang out. But this last time they didn't let him out. And so they took the family store. They took the apartment. My dad used to run milk and do some stuff like that for prostitutes because they were the only one with money. And then that dried up. Nobody was hiring them anymore. And his mom was moved. They moved into like the ghetto and he was, you know, they were being beaten up at school and he was in fights all the time and he was fed up with this shit. And so he just said, you know what, mom, I'm going to go to England and I'm going to save us. Like, why England? He said, it was the only country I thought would take us in. He goes, I didn't know. So his buddy Eric's dad was also put into a camp. He goes, Eric, let's just go, right? So him and Eric, they took off, no map, no money, no food, no clothes, no nothing, 1,500 kilometers, and they start walking. It takes over a month to walk to Amsterdam. They walked a lot at night because of the SS. They could have gotten picked up and killed or at any time. You're 13 years old. What was embarrassing for him was he was stealing food and clothes off, you know, laundry lines, out of markets, off people's orchards. You know, that's what we ate. We saw an apricot tree. We saw an apple tree. We saw whatever. Like, that was our food. And that's what we ate. And we slept out in the bush, you know. Once he got to Amsterdam, he heard German. And so a sailor was there. And he said, I need to get to England. How can I do that? And the sailor says, do you have any money? He goes, I don't have any money. And he goes, okay, we'll come back at midnight. So at midnight, the boys came back and he got them onto the ship and, you know, stowed them away on the ship, crossed the English Channel, you know, enter England. And now it's like, they're just like today, they're put into an, you know, like a camp for refugees. And, but now the war is really taking off and all of the guys in England are, you know, I'm going to sign up for, oh, I can't wait to sign up for the, you know, a war, kill Hitler. So all the farms are left, you know, without field hands and stuff. And so they said, do you want to go work on a farm? If you go work on a farm, you get out of this camp. He goes, yeah, I'll go work on a farm. No English. remember, there's no English. Like, he's just, you know, hand signals. And so he went to work on the farm. He was like 13 years old, and he starts working on the farm, and his buddy hated it. Dad said, I got beat up all the time because they'd ask me for a shovel, I'd bring a rake, or they asked me for this, I'd bring that. And he goes, and they would kick me and go, you're stupid and whatever. But, you know, slowly you learn the language. And he got a letter from his mom, and the letter said, I need 40 pounds. That's what the 40 pounds is. It's not weight. It's British pounds.
Right.
And he's like, what am I going to do? So he showed it to Reverend Staunton, was the man who owned the valley. Like, he owned the residence, he owned the town. It was called Staunton on the Vale, which was after his family. So he went to Reverend Staunton. He says, here's a letter from my mom. She needs 40 pounds, and they'll let them leave. They'll let them leave and go to New York. She has a cousin in New York. He's offered her a home, but they have to pay to get out of the camp, and they need to pay the voyage. Everybody was leaving via Genoa on the Saturnia, and that was how you got to New York. And so Reverend says, well, if I give them the money, how am I going to get paid back? And he goes, well, I'll work for you. So he stayed 5 years on that farm and worked that money off, $90. And didn't see his family. And so his brother was killed. He met his brother in England. Sometime he's about 18, I guess, when he saw him. He got shot down the next week. He was the American Air Force. And so then his mother petitioned to the government in New York that if you only had one child left, that you could bring them home from the war, right? So he was brought home on a U-boat and brought to New York. And that's where, you know, he lived for a little while. And hence his life started as an immigrant.
It's just everything, like that whole intro, that, and it's in the book as well that you're reading. It's like you can't put it down because you think, how is this possible? And I know my dad's an immigrant as well. So as I was reading, I was thinking, oh my God, you know, my father didn't have to go, you know, 1500 kilometers walking and all of that. Italy wasn't as affected as the area that your dad was born and raised. And that he wasn't prosecuted or persecuted the way, you know, your family and the people at that time. But, you know, the hardship that they faced, and because of the war and not having food. And, yeah, America, you know, the United States, we were affected. Canada was affected, but not like that. And I'll just share with you, because I know you're in Canada. My husband is Canadian. My in-laws, they were five girls. And during the war, England was in bad shape, too.
Yeah, it was in really bad shape.
He took the daughters. He had a family member, a sister or something in Canada. And the girls, they were young. And they went to Canada and lived there for a few years before they could go back to Canada, because he was afraid for their life as well. It's bad stuff that we're talking about, you know. And here, your dad did everything for his family and worked in this, worked off, lived up to his word that I'll pay you off, I'll work for you. And the hardships that he faced. And yet, now fast forward as a 94-year-old man and 92 when you spoke with him, that he's never said a bad word about anybody. He should be hating everybody, you know, with the life that this poor man had. So what a great lesson for you to be raised by such a valiant man who's just freaking out of this world amazing. Did you learn anything through your dad about your family, maybe your grandmother or something that you hadn't known before? Again, that there was kind of a ha-ha moment for you, Frankie?
Yeah. I mean, I knew my grandmother. I didn't know my grandfather. And my grandmother, when I met her, was just this lovely, beautiful human being. You know, she just loved me. And, you know, the feeling was mutual. And she was an amazing cook. I mean, my dad hadn't lived with her for many, many years. I mean, he was 12 when he left, pretty much, right? He just turned 13.
He was a baby.
He was really a baby. And I mean, I think of my kids at that age, and I'm like, oh my God, I wouldn't let them out the door. But, you know, I didn't know that my grandfather, I knew that he was a little bit brutal, but I didn't know that he was that cruel. And when my dad got to New York and he said to him, I wish it was you that had died and not my other son. And I'm like, you effing bastard, you. Like, this kid got you out of a concentration camp.
Yeah.
He got you to New York. He worked it off. And you have the, you know, the gall to say to him, I wish you had died? What an ass. Like, I mean, I just hated that man from that second. And, you know, I'm really glad that he's dead because he'd be dead if he wasn't dead.
Yeah.
You know, nobody says anything bad about my dad around me.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So that was just, it blew me away. And then years after that, after I was, because I was born in Austria too. After that, he was sick and he went to Austria and he expected my dad, who was living there again, to, you know, take him to all these doctors in Switzerland and all over the place. My dad took him to like 5 doctors. I don't know what he had. I think he might have had Parkinson's or something. And my dad couldn't remember, but nobody could cure him. And he got mad at him. He got mad at my dad because my dad said, enough is enough. I can't afford to spend any more money on you. I got a family, you know, sorry, live with it. You know, all the doctors said, you know, we can't help you. You have to go with that, you know? And he got really mad that, you know, what an ungrateful son he had because he wouldn't help him. I mean,
selfish, selfish,
yeah,
man.
Like, which, absolutely no comprehension of what this child did for him.
And it's mind blowing because your dad is seriously, and in the book you tell about that he was never abusive and never mean and always loving, the polar opposite,
yeah,
of who his dad was. So he clearly got a lot of your grandmother's, you know, genetics and,
yeah,
and kind of disposition, you know. Why, and now your dad, yeah, dedicated the book to immigrants. Why do you think he did that? Which was kind of cool. It's kind of cool that he did.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I have 2 brothers who were Vietnamese boat children that he adopted. I think the immigrant, you know, as I'm an immigrant, my kids are first Canadian, you know,
yeah,
my first generation Canadian.
Sure.
He's an immigrant. I just think that it's in our blood, in our family,
the
fabric. And for people. And it's kind of, you know, he looked around at what was going on in the world today and in America, because, you know, he'd lived in America for 30 some odd years and now he's in Mexico. But he sees, you know, the hardship that's going on, whether it's Syria or it's Honduras or whoever needs to come. They need to come. And, you know, they're being really hurt. And they're being in this idea that, you know, if you wear a headscarf or you do this, then, you know, we don't want you or we don't want anything that you're bringing. They forget. I mean, it was the Italians who built the city. It was the Polish who built the cities. You know, they were the construction workers. They were the bricklayers.
That's right.
They were the guys who did the high, you know, that's where all the apartments, like all of that stuff. My dad was in elevator business. I know. He dealt with all of these groups of people. And so these immigrants were the ones who talk about the fabric of a city. They're the ones who brought it up. And every generation and wave of immigrants who come, you know, you have the Chinese who built the railroad. Can you go to any little town anywhere in America or Canada?
Sure.
There's always going to be a Chinese restaurant because they built the frickin' railroad, right?
Yeah.
Like all of this stuff. So they just need to sit back and go, oh, yeah, you know, these people, this population, they did this, you know?
And
forget
it,
that, because I don't know anybody who's – I know one person who is fifth generation. I know one person who's fifth generation Canadian, and you know what? They came on the Underground Railroad.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
So yes, I agree with everything you just said. My dad, I'm laughing because when he came here, he was 19, I think, and he brought his family over one by one. He had 4 sisters. He worked construction during the day, and at night he went to school to learn English. And,
right,
you know, digging ditches, he did construction. That's what he did.
That's what they did.
He built New York because that, right, he didn't speak the language. That was all that he was capable of, which is funny because my dad is an engineer and eventually, you know, became,
yeah,
an engineer in the United States. Do you think, talking about the changing times and the changes that your dad has gone through and the changes that immigrants have gone through, and again, they're the fabric of this country and Canadians too, you know, in Canada,
yeah,
as well. Do you feel that the Holocaust could happen now?
Yes. As a matter of fact, my aunt, wrote to me and she was very worried. She, her husband was in, he's in the book. My uncle Max, who's 100, who just turned 106.
That's crazy.
God bless him.
Good gene pool.
And he had been in every one of the concentration camps for years. And he taught at the University of Vienna, about the Holocaust, still teaches about the Holocaust, and runs the only Jewish temple in Salzburg. He's responsible for that little temple. I think they've only got like 20 members or something. I don't know. I mean, they're all gone, right? However, she wrote, and just recently she said, we're thinking about leaving because we have that same feeling again, that of the Holocaust. And she goes, where should we go? Should we come to Canada? Maybe we'll go to Mexico with your dad, but it's time to leave again. And so when they feel that at that age, like they're seeing what's happening on the streets, they're connected.
Because they live through it.
That's very scary.
It's intimate.
They live through it.
They know that feeling.
They see the signs again, and it scared the crap out of them.
Frankie, yeah. That's scary.
It is really scary. And
are they going to come? Do they decide definitively?
I don't know.
You don't know?
She's still on hold about it, kind of. But I think, you know, I don't know. I mean, it'd probably be a real hardship for him at his age to get up and move. She's a little bit younger than him. But, you know, look at what happened in America in the last month. Oh, my God. Massive shootings everywhere. Like, where do you go? Can't come there. You know, it's like everybody got, Andy got your gun, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody got a gun.
It's interesting. Before we started the show, Frankie and I, you know, we were talking and I said that, like you were laughing, saying 13, you know, my dad walked 1500 kilometers. I wouldn't let my kids out the front door for fear they'd get kidnapped. Right. Oh, like you live in such a bad neighborhood. It just the irony of a 13-year-old. So talk about the changes that man has seen, the kindness that he has showed, the successes that he's had, successes and failures, the ups and downs, which you talk about in the book as well. Now your dad, he's still an entrepreneur, right?
He's still
functioning, man. The dude is amazing. What was his influence on you as an entrepreneur? Because you're amazing.
Oh,
also.
Very much so. Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, total influence, total influence. I was a little girl. My dad said, you can do anything and be anything that you want. Doesn't matter, boy or girl. And I took that to heart. I really did. And without even knowing what an entrepreneur was, I became one. And like I have siblings who are professionals, doctor, lawyer, architect, you know. I never knew what I wanted to be. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. However, I keep reinventing myself, and that's part of the fun. Because for me, I like to birth a company. I like the idea of being creative, having the idea, getting it out there. But I'm not somebody who likes to run it. Like that bores me. So it's like, you know, I'll draw the dress, I'll create the dress, but I'm not the finisher of the dress. You know, that's fun for me. And so I got that, and I need to always reinvent every couple of years to add something or subtract something and create something new for myself. I get that entrepreneurial spirit. I love it. I couldn't live any other way, I don't think. I used to love working on commission because no ceiling. Yay. I can do whatever I want. It's up to me to make it. And that's really, really fun. It's like, you know, the carrot's always there and I can go for it. Where the other way is like, that doesn't matter how hard I work. I'm going to, you know, make 10 bucks an hour or whatever the case was, right?
You're hysterical. People are listening going, commission. Oh my God. Because there are some people in the world that should not be entrepreneurs and they know that. And that's a wonderful thing. You know, you like the stability of a paycheck. You work really hard to earn it. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's so funny as I was reading the book too, because I know you, I was like, oh my God, she's so much like her dad. She's so much like her dad. The only difference is, you know how you just said you like to reinvent yourself? I think with your dad's story, he was almost forced many times to reinvent. And he did. He ultimately kept reinventing himself.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think with you, it's a choice. And again, I could be totally wrong, Frankie, you know, because it's your dad. But I think he was almost forced several times to make those changes. And he was so open to change that, all right, it's what I need to do. All right.
And I think that's what it is. I think that's why I'm a champion for change, is that change doesn't scare me. Like, I embrace change. I like change. And I think if you like it, then I see the fear in other people because that instability, it's like to them it's instability. To me, it's like freedom.
Fun. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's freedom. That was a great word.
I think
your dad, I think if he had lived in a better time, I think he would have chosen the changes too. But and here's the thing, Frankie, you know, you choose the change, you choose when to reinvent. I choose the changes in my life. I'm in control, right? We're in control as entrepreneurs, sometimes in control. But he, I think, being forced, and this is why, and I think his story is so important, because I'm tired of hearing people, the woe's me, my life, I was handed a bad deck. Okay, your father was handed the crappiest of crappy deck, you know, decks of cards here, and yet rose to the occasion. And the thing that I think caught me and inspired me and touched me maybe was that not only did he did it with grace. He did it with respect for himself and everyone. He was treated like crap and a piece of dirt, and he was respectful with everyone that he encountered. Mm-hmm. So for me to be given such a crappy hand and yet to rise to the occasion, to do it with grace, to do it with poise, to do it with respect, self-respect into others, holy crap, he is a role model, I think, that we need today. And I will just comment, because it's funny, as I was reading, again, even though my dad didn't have, I think, he had a rough life as well.
Yeah.
And maybe
it was that time.
I think your dad's still in the concentration, and that's horrific. But I look at my dad and I see the changes he's made, and he's always respectful. He's always kind, and he never says a bad word about anyone. I think we're raised in whether it's Canada or the United States, but we're raised to judge and question and put down to bolster our own ego. And I don't think were raised that way.
No. And I don't know if Mrs. Staunton, you know, I don't know what effect she really had on him or not. But I know that I was sent to an English boarding school, and everything is about manners. And I think he learned manners.
Yes.
And I think manners are really important, and they're missing today.
Agreed.
There are no manners today.
Agreed.
Children do not know manners. Their parents don't know manners. People, they've gone out the window, and that tore. I think there's a big hole in the fabric of our society right now with that big piece of missing, because that's where the niceties come in. That's where the kindness comes in, the generosities come in. And just, you know what? Like, it gives you a moment to pause. It's just like, thank you. And these immigrants, they have that. They have that gratitude. We don't have that gratitude. I mean, people talk about gratitude. Let's have gratitude. Let's think about gratitude. Let's write in our gratitude journals. But I don't think they're grateful.
Yeah.
They're just not grateful for what they have. They always want more, 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 instead of just being grateful for where they are in that moment. And you know what? These people are grateful that nobody's shooting at them in that moment. Last month, but for the most part, we don't have to worry about that. Like,
no.
We didn't grow up worrying about, is somebody going to come with a gun and knock on my door because, you know, I'm not letting my sister be a prostitute or whatever the case may be. Like, these people have real world problems, and they're trying to get away from people, criminals. And we're going, no, we don't want you to mess up our little world. And it's such a horrible, you know, just closed perspective.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're living with blinders on. It's all about me, 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 and we don't want to share, when there's so much. It's such a lack mentality, but there's so much and so many places that are uninhabited that people would be happy to go to and bring their expertise and bring, you know, all the beautiful things that they do. We love to travel and go to their countries and go, oh, look at that neat little thing. We bring them back, but we don't want them here. And so, you know, that's what happened to the Jews too, like after World War II, and they went around the world in ships, like, can we come here? Can we come here? Nobody wanted them. Nobody would take them in, no country. And you know what? It's like, holy shit, like, what happens to you now? They did the same thing with the little kids, you know, from England and the orphans, and they're on a train, and anybody want to adopt me? No. Like, people are just, you know, it's just like, it really bothers me so much
that they're this way
and they don't want to share. And so, yeah, I mean, I think we need to bring manners back. We definitely need to do that. And people need to understand, like, you know, even like, you know, kids today, like, there's no thank you or anything. And it's like, you know what? A thank you would be nice. Like, that's all. That's all people want. My daughter, you know, she's been running around like crazy. She just got, like, I don't know, thousands of dollars worth of gifts for this charity drive that she's been doing. She goes, Mom, all I want is a thank you. Like, they haven't even said thank you, you know,
taking for granted.
My own gas, my own this, I'm going all these places after work, before work, and they can't say thank you. And she goes, that really bothers me. And I she doesn't want a medal. She just wants a thank you.
No.
She deserves that thank you.
She does. And it's sad because, you know, when I teach at my corporate clients, right, and we're talking about sales and all that. But do you know, in our like customer service standards, I don't care what client I work with, you have to have some foundational information so you can duplicate and create the culture. one thing I have to include, say please and thank you. Thank you for your business. Thank you for coming in today. And every time I teach it, I say, now you're all laughing, but we need to teach this because we forget to say please, thank you. And the other thing that drives me crazy, Frankie, I'm going to go off on my rant now, is no problem. Okay. Was I a problem in the first place? How about saying, you're very welcome, it's my pleasure, versus this no problem. I swear to God, when I hear no problem, I correct people. My husband, and then if we're out at a restaurant, you know, the waitress or waiter says no problem, my husband looks at me, don't say anything. And I want to say, because I want to say, was I a problem in the first place? How about saying my pleasure? I don't, because my kids will kill me. You know, my husband will kill me. But I know exactly what you're saying. We're out of time, but I just want to make one more comment. I was honored to be given the book to read, to prepare for the show. But more importantly, I do think everyone should read it because it's a wonderful historic perspective. So that was kind of cool. We know it, but then to hear it from almost behind the scenes was really cool. But also your dad, like the shenanigans, the things that he did larger than life, it just put this whole human cool spin on this historic perspective. So I think that's what I loved most about the book. Again, I don't know if that's what you intended or that just how it kind of unfolded, but it was really a very cool book to read and
thank
experience.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and especially with everything that's happening today.
Let me just say one thing.
Yes, go ahead.
He was just here in May, and he came after my surgery, he wanted to help me, right? And it was so cute. And I'm like, okay, so He sat down, he reread the book again, and I could hear him in the corner. He's just chuckling and he's laughing, right? And his wife says, what are you laughing about? And he goes, you know, he goes, it's all true. He goes, but I can't believe it's me. And, you know, and it.
That's freaking cool. That is cool. It's his story. And while he was living it, you don't realize until you read it.
None of us do, though, do we?
No. No, it's amazing. Yeah, it's a great reflection. And you just said something so profound, I think, Frankie. People read the book, obviously, that it's a good read. But aside from that, we have to learn how to reflect back on our own lives to see the impact we've made or maybe the impact we haven't made that we should be making. And here, when he reads it, thinking, that was me. And the impact not only he had on his family like you, but all the people and all the stories and the impact of the people in his orbit that are quite, you know, far out as well, is just really kind of a cool thing. And we should take stock of our own life. Am I making that effect on people during my lifetime? Again, it's just another way. There's always time for change, right, Frankie?
Right, right.
We have to choose it. Yeah. And I think that's another wonderful thing about the book is maybe it'll help people navigate to see what the next change is for them. So,
it's too bad.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say older people are hesitant to talk about their personal life, right? But I think that everybody should ask their parents, you know, who did you love? Like, did you have an affair? Like stuff like that. Like, get to know who they really are. Cause I think that's what makes them so interesting and gives you a perspective in your own life.
Agree. I agree 100%. So read the book. Go to, if you want more information, first of all, Frankie is like a media queen. some just cool information that's out there as a resource for anyone, entrepreneurs, leaders, people who are trying to evolve, right, and just create better lives. Go to her website and tell me if this is still good. It's Unstoppable Frankie
Picasso.
Frankie Picasso. So UnstoppableFrankiePicasso.com. You can find everything about Frankie on that website. Amazing. Yeah. All of her medias, et cetera. And follow her because she's just, you're one cool lady. And I just love
having you on.
And I always love our time together. You guys, my partner and I, free communication style assessment. Frankie took it.
I did.
And I was not surprised by her results. It just gives you a little insight as to some of your strengths as we communicate with other humans, as well as blind spots that maybe you could change and tweak a little bit so that we show up and we just engage with ease instead of always feeling like we're fighting when we're chatting with people or speaking with people. Again, the UnstoppableFrankiePicasso.com. Please check out my amazing guests. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. And please buy the book. because that it truly is an inspiring book in and of itself. But I just think it's a story that's needed for our time today. I think it's an extremely relevant topic. For want of 40 pounds, again, the 40 pounds was the currency in England. Thank you again, my wonderful
friend Frankie. Thank you so much.
Just such a pleasure. I'm so glad you all joined us today as well, and I hope you've been inspired not only by our conversation, but by my wonderful guest and her energy and what she brings to the world. And I hope you will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together that, yeah, change is always in front of us and always here. You've got it. Just embrace it. Figure it out. Use Frankie. Use myself. Use all of these tools that we share with you to figure out how to navigate that change. Thank you all for joining us this week. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman. I wish you all a wonderful and inspired week. Go buy that book. It might be just what you're looking for to create the change in your life that you need. Thank you again. Take care, everybody.
You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. To learn more about Connie, visit her website, whitmanassoc.com. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you were here.